Hello, I'm Andrew Peach. Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service. In BBC OS Conversations, we bring people together to share their experiences. This time, conversations with someone who's having suicidal thoughts. In today's edition, our guests share their experiences of the depths and isolation that poor mental health can lead you into, and how the intervention of a stranger who takes the time and shows the courage to talk can turn a situation around.
What I've noticed is the most potent medicine that I can give somebody is a caring heart and a hug in their times of trial.
You might have seen the video of the rock legend Jon Bon Jovi the other day. He's seen helping a woman in distress who is on the ledge of a bridge in Nashville in the US. He carefully walks towards her, waves, and begins to talk to her. Eventually, the woman climbs off the ledge and Bon Jovi gives her a hug. The local police chief praised his action, saying, "It takes all of us to help keep each other safe." And it's that which is the inspiration for today's edition. And just to say that while our conversations are ultimately uplifting, they do deal with issues around suicide and suicidal thinking. So we've been hearing from people who know what it feels like to be in a situation similar to the one involving Bon Jovi and the woman he talked to on that bridge, from both perspectives of the experience. For our first conversation, we go back nearly 20 years to the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco. Kevin Berthier was at the time a young man who was deeply unhappy about his life, and Kevin Briggs was a California Highway Patrol officer who just happened to be nearby. Talking to my colleague Krupa Padhi, Kevin Berthier began by describing the state of his mind on that day.
March 11, 2005, I was 22 years old. I had spent 22 years pretty much pretending to be somebody that I wasn't, internalizing all my emotions. Anything that ever happened to me, I never really took the time to really go through it and get through it the way I should have. And it was just easier for me in life to act like everything was just fine. And so on that particular day, that's when I pretty much got overwhelmed the most, and I lost hope that day. And so I chose the Golden Gate Bridge. I didn't even know it was iconic for suicide attempts.
And what do you recall from the moments before Officer Kevin Briggs approached you?
For the first time in my life, feeling a sense of relief that it was going to be over. And this was probably my last day on earth.
Yeah. I'm so sorry you found yourself in this situation, in this dark place, and we really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. Kevin Briggs, let me bring you into this. You were going about your day as normal, on shift. You stopped for a coffee. Take us back.
Yes. So I was actually at a local coffee shop when I received a call of a man on the sidewalk of the bridge on a cell phone saying that he's suicidal and going to jump off the bridge. So I started working my way down there from the north end of the bridge to the south end. I didn't want to ride right up to him, so I stopped maybe 50, 75 feet away, something like that. And as I'm getting off of my motorcycle, what I see is him look my direction and then just run over and launch himself over the pedestrian rail. And at that time, all I could do was yell something to him, and I don't remember what that was, but when I did that, he reached out, and I thought he was gone, but he actually grabbed the rail, swung around, slammed into the bars, and landed on this small pipe that is around the North Tower.
Kevin Berthier, bringing you back in here, do you remember that moment when you heard Officer Briggs calling out to you?
I don't really recall exactly what was said, but I was in such a dark place. And my whole idea was that it was going to be over. So that voice kind of snapped me out of that dark place momentarily, and enough time for me to grab that guardrail, because I did hoist myself over that railing and I was ready to hit the water.
You then spoke for over 90 minutes. Kevin Briggs, do you recall what you spoke about?
Mainly it was him speaking, which is exactly what I wanted, because I want to gather as much information as I can to see if I can use that in assisting him to see a different time, a different spot than what he's in right now. So he spoke the majority of the time. I go by kind of 80-20. Let him speak 80% of the time and me 20, because when he's speaking, he's venting and I'm gathering that information. So we really spoke about his childhood all the way up until that day and that minute. And the big thing with this is not to try and fix anything. This is not the time for that, but just to be there for that individual, let them vent, let them talk, and then try to show them a reason, purpose, or hope, something along those lines.
Kevin Berthier, did you feel comfortable opening up to Officer Briggs?
Honestly, for the first time ever, I did. It was the first time in my life that I actually was having an open and honest conversation about me. I don't know why it took for me to get to that point, but I did feel comfortable talking about my emotions once he created this safe place for me to do so.
Mm. Are you able and willing to share some of what you shared with him at that moment?
Absolutely. I mean, I believe that because it was my first conversation, I just opened up about everything that was on the inside of me, everything that bothered me. I talked about my childhood. I talked about the divorce. I talked about the adoption. I talked about going through my own breakup with my child's mother. I mean, I talked about pretty much everything that got me to that point, but how I felt with my failure as a father, you know, and my daughter, that was the issue that he was able to, you know, realize because he listened to me. You know, when you listen to somebody, you're understanding where they're coming from. And had he not listened to me, he never would have understood what my real pain was.
But ultimately, he was a stranger to you, and you are on the cusp of potentially taking your own life, and you feel comfortable enough or possibly vulnerable enough to open up to him.
I mean, I think that in our world that we live in, we think that our comfort comes from people that we know. And honestly, comfort doesn't come from people that we know because we have a built-in familiarity with that individual. So regardless of what we're doing, we want to live up to a built-in expectation that we've presented to that person. Sometimes people are going to help you. They're not going to always look like you. And that's the power of connection.
We're going to leave that conversation there for now, but we will return a little later to hear more from Kevin Berthier and Officer Briggs. Kevin Berthier, as we just heard, was distracted on the bridge by the arrival of the highway officer who brought his understanding of how to handle a situation like this. Our next conversation, hosted by Luke Jones, is also centred on the Golden Gate Bridge. This time it was 24 years ago. It involves Captain Mark Mykowski, a firefighter and first responder, and Kevin Hines, who was also feeling deeply unhappy. He walked out onto the bridge. Nobody spoke to him or tried to stop him. And he jumped.
The moment my hands left the rail, I had an instantaneous regret for my actions. And this 100% recognition that I just made the greatest mistake of my life, it was likely too late. And I think back to, of course, the Coast Guard who saved me from the water and looked me in the eyes and said, you know, do you understand, young man, that we have pulled 26 dead bodies from these waters and only one live one, you? And I can tell you that gave me crystal clarity. And after my 10 and a half hour back surgery, replacing my shattered vertebrae with titanium, all I wanted to do was survive.
Mark, in your many years as a paramedic, you've had to see people and come across people in that desperate state. What do you make of Kevin's story and how do you approach these situations when you come across them?
Kevin's story is extremely powerful. He overcame that incident. He's a survivor, but his survivor wasn't just surviving that one jump. It's surviving day to day. And just because you're having a bad moment doesn't mean that you have a bad life. Those moments don't define you. It's what you do in those moments. As a longtime first responder, what I've noticed is the most potent medicine that I can give somebody is a caring heart and a hug in their times of trial. It's up for us as first responders to have our best day on somebody else's worst day. And we can't do that by turning off our feelings and acting like a robot. We have to treat them like humans because we are humans.
Kevin, you know, if a person with genuine kindness had just stopped and said, "Are you okay?" would that be the beginning of them doing enough?
You know, Luke, it would have been that simple. I had made a pact with myself that if one person says something like that or a variation of it, I would have told them everything and begged them to save me. And I know we have to take responsibility for ourselves. We have to save ourselves. I get that. But there's no reason why we could not be more aware of the people around us because everybody needs help sometimes. And just because they're not asking for help doesn't mean we can't go up to them and say, "Hey, how you going? Are you okay? Is there anything I can do for you?" And you might be met with a negative response, and that's okay. And you just go, "Okay, I'll walk away from this situation." But you might be met with someone who is in desperate need of care and empathy, and who goes, how'd you know I was hurting? And then you have a conversation, and then it turns out that they just lost their mom or dad, or their fiance just left them, or something terrible happened, and they're going through some kind of trauma. And you say, well, you know, I'm going to be an ear to listen for this moment right now. And I can tell you from personal experience, after my attempt off the Golden Gate Bridge and my subsequent physical rehabilitation and my psych ward stay after that, I was walking on Market Street in San Francisco, and there was a young lady. She was stepping on and off the curb, in and out of traffic. And I knew immediately what was going on. She was thinking of walking in front of a car. And so at the point she stepped back at one moment, I stood in front of her and she was kind of shocked. I said, hey, are you okay? And she literally said, what do you care? And I said, well, you're human and so am I, and that's all that I need. And I said, you look like you're about to do something that I think you don't truly want to do. I said, will you give me 5 minutes of your time for me to convince you that suicide is not the answer? And she was blown away that I was even on that level with her. And she sat down with me on the parking curb area. And I told her my story. I told her what I did. And I said, it was the worst action I ever took in my life, and I wish it never happened. I said, I'm so glad that I got this moment to sit here with you, because I can tell you right now, suicide is not the answer to your problems. It is the problem. And I promise you that suicide can never take the pain away. It only makes it impossible for things to ever get better. And she looked at me and I said, will you do me a favor and just promise me that you'll be here tomorrow? And she said, yes, I will. And she said, thank you very much for seeing me, for just seeing me. That's all she needed. People want to be seen and they want to be heard. And of course, they want to be loved.
Mark, what's your experience of dealing with people in this situation? I mean, what kind of response have you had?
First responders very much so deal with a lot of these health and wellness issues. We're genuine helpers. But when it comes down to things, we can talk the talk. We can walk the walk. Our journeys may have been a little bit different, but I have something in my Rolodex, in my encyclopedia of my career that I can relate to them with. Mm. And that's what it boils down to, is finding that one common thing that you have with somebody and then building your foundation of that relationship off that commonality. And like I said, some of the best times and the best medicine I've given in the back of an ambulance is holding somebody's hand for that last 5 minute, 10 minute ride to the hospital. And just that human side of things pays dividends beyond what we can imagine.
And how is life now, Kevin? I mean, do you look back on that period of time and feel like a different person?
You know, in some senses, yes. In some senses, no. I still struggle. Today is a bit of a bad mental health day, and I have to share that with you because I have to be honest about it. I don't subscribe to the highlight reel on Instagram. I subscribe to being honest in the moment at the time. But to answer your question, life is great. I have a lovely wife that I've been married to for 17 years, together for 20. And I get the honor and privilege to be here every day and to fight for my wellness. And I'm grateful for every waking moment, truly. You know, I think that those of us who are sane and well have a responsibility to those of us who are not, to share that compassion, to share that kindness and that generosity of time with someone struggling so that they can keep fighting.
Kevin Hines, he's now a mental health campaigner, and with him, first responder Captain Mark Mykowski. This is Andrew Peach, and you're listening to BBC OS Conversations from the BBC World Service. Our next conversation brings together Pooja Priyamvada, who's an academic and suicide prevention counsellor in India, and Spencer Kitson, an engineer living in Johannesburg in South Africa. In 2017, Spencer stopped and stepped in when he noticed a man behaving unusually.
I was driving home one evening. It was about 9 p.m. at night. And as I was crossing one of the bridges that go over the highway, I saw a man standing sort of leaning on the edge, but he was kind of leaning on his arms. So I could see something was definitely wrong. I slowed down, pulled over. And as I did that, I kind of saw him start moving towards, almost to start climbing over. And that's what actually urged me to get out the vehicle and approach him.
And when you spoke to him, I mean, what did he say? What did you say?
Well, when I first got to him, he was in tears. He was bawling his eyes out. He actually didn't even really respond to me in the first few comments that I made. And I sort of said, "You're right." And I wasn't sure exactly what he was doing. And he kind of just kept crying. And I said to him, "Look, if you need some help, I'm here for you." And that's when he started opening up to me. And he ultimately indicated that his girlfriend was taking his child away from him. He was no longer allowed to see his kid. He had lost his job and found himself homeless. The bridge, just for perspective, was across a highway. And he was aiming to jump directly onto one of the sides where the cars drive.
Oh.
So, yeah. And ultimately got him to my vehicle. And that's when I decided that he didn't seem like a threat to me, more to himself. And I said, "Hey, why don't you just come spend a bit of time with me and, you know, we'll chat a bit about what's going on." And actually took him to my house, who I had a friend of mine waiting, and we took a walk with him. And that's where we actually got a good chance to chat to him and kind of bring up his spirit and let him know that, you know, things will work out for the best, even though at this point in time, he doesn't feel that way.
Pooja, what do you make of that?
I think what Spencer did was amazing, because sometimes just that little moment can actually save a life. Had he just driven past, maybe, you know, nobody else would have stopped. So kudos to you, Spencer. And you certainly were very thoughtful about, you know, the rest of it as well. So that was good
thinking on your part.
Yeah, to give him a lot of, you know, listening space, and you listen to him and you allayed his fears. And that is very important in that moment of crisis.
And he actually ended up staying with you for a while, is that right?
Yeah, so obviously on the first night, after I'd spent a bit of time with him, I wasn't necessarily too keen on having him stay the night at my house. I mean, I just met the guy and I could smell that he had consumed. So I was a bit cautious. So I did take him back to where he had considered his residence, which was in a park. And I came home, I put up a post on Facebook, and initially I was looking for a place for him to stay, you know, if someone had a back room or something along the lines of that, and some donations and potentially an option for work. And I woke up and my Facebook had absolutely blown up. I think I had like 5,000 notifications, I had messages, and yeah, I immediately sort of went and I found him and I took him some clothes. And I said, "Look, I think your life's about to change. There's a lot of people that actually want to reach out and support you and help you in many different ways." And so I brought him in, helped him get a job. He had several interviews over the preceding week. And people had donated a lot of money to him as well to just help him get on his feet, get clothes, things like that.
Incredible. Pooja, I mean, you work in India. Have you seen similar stories of kind-heartedness and helpfulness, not just from individuals, but I guess from a community, a wide group of people?
You see, social media is a tricky place. It works both ways. So yes, the positive part is this, that a lot of people connect. But then in India, I do not know about the rest of the world, but in India, social media sometimes also gets nasty. Traditionally, conventionally, a death by suicide is considered to be a sin. So that is one part of the belief system. The other part is that people relate to it as an act of cowardice. It is only people who are cowards, who are not brave enough, they think of killing themselves. So that narrative as well. And people do not understand the psychosocial part of this crisis, that sometimes it's a financial situation, as Spencer described in his story. Sometimes it is a personal relationship issue. Our Mental Health Care Act came in 2017, and only now suicide is decriminalized in India.
Spencer, what do you make of that?
I must be honest, it's quite interesting to hear the perspectives from obviously an Indian side. You mentioned it was originally a criminal offense, so I would assume that obviously should the person attempt suicide and not go through with it, they would actually be arrested.
Yes, they were. There was a criminal case on them for this prior to the new law. And it then became another kind of torture in our kind of slow legal system, where they had to then, you know, fight a case. So now the law is more sensitive. So if somebody survives a suicide attempt, they are rather referred to therapy and other kind of support, and there is no criminal offense against them. And the approach is that if there is somebody who survives an attempt, they are given proper support. And if somebody dies by suicide, then their immediate family or friends or whoever interacted with them closely are also offered support to handle their grief and whatever difficult feelings they might be going through.
Suicide Prevention Counselor Pooja Priyamvada talking to us from India. Before her, Spencer Kitson in South Africa. Earlier, we heard from two people, Highway Patrol Officer Kevin Briggs and Kevin Berthier, describing the moment on the Golden Gate Bridge when Kevin Berthier came within seconds of jumping off. Officer Briggs arrived just in time to distract him and ultimately, through talking and connecting with him, prevented a possible loss of life. Afterwards, they went their separate ways, but sometime later, they found themselves meeting up again.
I don't follow up with folks. I don't want to be a trigger for them. I wanted them to get past this day, a very, very dark day, and hopefully move on with their lives. But years later, I was asked by the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention if I would fly out to New York City and receive a Lifesavers Award. And I think it was, they called me three times and I turned it down. And then they went through my commander and he said, you are going to go out there and receive this award. And then they asked me if there's somebody that I had saved, which, you know, I don't like that, but if there's somebody I had saved that could go out and present me with this award. And I kept telling them no. Well, there's a fairly famous photo of both of us on the bridge. And my commander knew about this. And he also knew that Kevin's mother had written me a very nice note a couple of weeks after this incident. And I had that note. So I finally agreed to go over to Oakland and knock on the door, see if his mother still lived there and if she might get a hold of Kevin to see if he would do this. So that's what I did. And I knocked on the door. She answered. And after she discovered who I was, a big hug. And I went inside and we sat down for quite some time and spoke. And next thing you know, we met in New York City.
At first, I was nervous. I mean, you don't know what to expect. I had all this built-in anxiety, so I had no idea exactly how it was going to play out. But it was phenomenal. It was like two old high school buddies that haven't seen each other in years. We've been playing off this, you know, from that day. I mean, we've built our relationship and we've built a bond based on the worst day of my life. And so that's why I understand how important the connection is in this world. Because we're able to share something that I've never been able to share with any individual. So we'll always be connected in a way that I can never have the words to describe.
Always connected and now firm friends, Kevin Berthier and Officer Briggs. I'd like to thank them and everyone who took part in today's conversations for sharing these very personal stories with such great honesty. If you've been affected by anything you may have heard in today's edition, please do get in touch with a relevant support group wherever you might be. You can also search for BBC Action Line, which contains information offering advice and support. I'm Andrew Peach, and you've been listening to The Documentary from the BBC World Service.